Aging populations affect EMS response, providing resources to your community to aid in EMS responses, dangers of distracted driving to pedestrians and cyclists, and we'll take a look at synthetic drugs of abuse, Molly and N-Bomb. If that's what you're looking for, you found it right here on this week's episode of The Medic Cast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is The Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Medicast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's show. Got a great show coming for you this week. I'll be bringing you several EMS news items, including an informational item on aging patient populations and how it affects how we provide services and resources to our communities. Then, after the news, I'll be bringing you another segment with our good friend, pharmacist Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center. She'll be addressing some new drugs of abuse seen in communities around the country. All of that coming up later on in this week's Tip of the Week. Before we get to that, though, I do want to make sure that you are following up and checking out the links and additional information that's available for you over at the MedicCast blog. You'll find that over at mediccast.com/blog. There's a show notes link right there at the top of the page. Click that link and it'll take you right to the most recent episode. And of course, you can scroll down there and find any previous episode as well. There's also a search box there in the upper right-hand corner, so if you're looking for something in particular, you can enter some search terms there, but make sure you're taking the time and following up on the information you get on the show, and understand how it applies to your own EMS practice and your own EMS protocols. If you want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll do so. Make sure you do. You can email me directly at podmedic@mac.com. Go ahead and shoot me an email with your comments, your questions on the shows, or maybe you want to send me a suggestion or an interview idea for a future episode. Either way, I want to let you know I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, and I'll get back to you as well. So please, please keep those emails coming in. Also, if you're an iPhone, an Android, a Windows phone, or a Windows 8 user, make sure you check out the free MedicCast podcast app that's available for you in your device's store. Just search MedicCast EMS app. And if you already have it, please go back and make a comment or leave a rating for the app and be an active supporter of the MedicCast community in that way. That's enough contact information and other information. We'll go ahead and get into this week's news that'll be coming up next, but always remember to support our sponsors. And when you get in touch with them, let them know you heard about them here on the MedicCast. Tell them thanks for supporting the show. Starting off this week's EMS news items, we take a look at how one Maine community is dealing with the aging of its population. Harpswell, Maine could be a small town in your area. They have declining volunteer resources, increased ambulance needs, and an aging population. The most recent census data from 2010 has the population's median age going up from 45 in 2000 to 53 now. The percentage of the population over the age of 45 is now 22%, and town leaders have proposed increasing the coverage by local hospital paramedics to round-the-clock, seven-day-a-week coverage. They're now currently covering the area part-time. The plan they have proposed is to increase the paramedic coverage for the first 3 months of the new year as a trial to see if it's going to work out, and then they'll have a vote at the end of that time to propose coverage for the entire year. The proposed cost to the town will be nearly $200,000 for the full year addition. Now, this is something I'm seeing more and more frequently. Small towns around the country are struggling with their shift from volunteer EMS systems to the need for full-time paid ambulance coverage. Harpswell is currently looking also to increase their volunteer numbers. They're offering free EMT classes, and they hope that they may increase the number of EMTs from the three they have now to seven or eight people that will be willing to volunteer in the community. Still, these folks are going to have jobs and commitments with their families and distractions from their volunteer duties. But this is a problem we're seeing everywhere, including my community. We have a volunteer ambulance service supplemented by paid paramedics and chase cars. And while it's not popular to think about in my area, I think that the writing is on the wall and we're going to see full-time paid ambulance coverage within the next 10 years or so in my community. But what's happening in your area? Are you seeing a decline in volunteer EMS as well? I look forward to hearing your comments, so get back in touch with me and let me know what's going on in your area where you have volunteers. Shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Share your thoughts with me and the rest of the Medicast community. You know, I talk about community outreach here on the show all the time. There are all kinds of things we do. Prevention programs, CPR training programs, other health-related services that we all provide in our service areas. But there are also some things we can do that can actually make our jobs a little bit easier while providing a service to the community at the same time. In North Adams, Massachusetts, the ambulance service there is reaching out to their communities with the help of two grants from local foundations. First, they received a grant to provide child car seat installation and safety assistance to families in that area, reaching out to those people that have young children. Then, they also got a grant to distribute 4,000 file of life cards for senior citizens in the communities. Now, these cards will come in two sizes, one that can fold up and fit in a wallet, and another that will fit inside a brightly colored folder magnet that goes right on the fridge. These cards can be filled out to include pertinent medical history, list of medications, emergency contacts for the residents in a given home. Now, not only will the cards be distributed, but there will also be assistance that they provide in the local senior centers and with visiting nurses to help people fill the cards out, which I think is a genius move. This is a great example of not just providing the community with additional services, but also giving them the assistance needed to utilize those services in the way that they need to be utilized. Now, when these cards are filled out completely and posted in a prominent location in the home, it ends up making our jobs easier, and we can provide better and more focused care to these patients when we respond. So I want you to look into how you can find and utilize these types of programs in your communities. And when you do, make sure you let me know about it here on the Medicast, and I'll be able to share it with the rest of the community here on the show, as well as give you guys a shout out for the good job you're doing. Finally, as we are already talking about services to the community this week and what we can do to help make our jobs a little easier, I thought I would look at this article based on a report in the journal Public Health Reports about the increased dangers from distracted drivers. Now, this is another area we can provide education and prevention efforts for our communities. According to the journal article, the numbers of pedestrians and cyclists killed by distracted drivers in the U.S. has increased by 50% in a 5-year period. Distracted driving includes not just cell phone or texting while driving, but also things like fiddling with your GPS or eating something while you're driving. Most victims in the situation that they looked at are males. Most of these incidents actually occurred in broad daylight when it should be easier to see these people on the roads. The authors note that while seatbelt use and other driving safety measures are very widely accepted right now, the dangers of distracted driving is just not as stigmatized by the drivers and passengers out there. Now, this affects us as well when we respond in our ambulances. EMTs and paramedics around the country are viewing the aftermath of distracted driving accidents all the time. Perhaps it's time for us to become a little more active in our efforts to curb this behavior in our own communities. Now, there are a lot of prevention resources out there for us to use. I urge you to check out the website over at distraction.gov, posted by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. There are downloads there, Facebook avatars, posters, video and audio public service announcements for your local TV and radio stations, and all these things are available for free over at the site. There are resources there for everyone, including parents, teens, even employers. Check out the site over at distraction.gov and make use of the resources on your own company's website or in your community outreach programs. I don't think you'll be sorry you did. This week on the Tip of the Week, we visit again with our good friend Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center. We'll be talking with her about more synthetic drugs of abuse she and her colleagues around the country are seeing when they get called in to poison centers nationwide. Molly and N-bomb are slang terms for some new drugs being seen on the drug scene for our nation's teens and young adults. So check out this segment where Lisa shares this important information on recognizing these drugs and how to treat them when presented with patients who have overdosed on them.
Welcome back to another Tox Tidbit episode here, and we're going to visit again with our good friend Lisa Booz from the Maryland Poison Center. Hi, Lisa. How are you doing today?
Fine, thanks, Jim. Jamie, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. What do you have for us this month?
Well, I'll ask a question of you first. Have you heard of the terms Molly and N-bomb?
No, I haven't.
Well, a lot of people haven't, and so that's why I want to bring this to your attention. Not too long ago, we first became aware of a lot of new drugs of abuse that were legal and gaining in popularity. And so we've talked a lot in the public, but also health professionals have been talking about synthetic marijuana, bath salts, drugs that are synthetic cathinones, and some other synthetic drugs. And poison centers were soon being called about overdoses to those new drugs, and we really didn't know what to expect at first. And we soon realized that most of these produce stimulant effects like amphetamines or cocaine. Now, we still receive calls about those types of synthetic drugs, but as laws are being passed to try to stop their abuse, we've seen other synthetic drugs taking their place. And lately, we've been hearing about two new or sort of new drugs that are very popular among teens and adults. And one of them has a slang name of Molly, and the other one has a slang name of N-bomb. Both are very easily obtained through the internet, or they're sold by dealers on the streets or at music festivals or concerts. So I'll start with Molly. Now, Molly really isn't a new drug. It's just basically a popular name for one or more stimulant drugs. Molly's actually short for the term molecular, and it's been widely reported in the public as well as in the news media to be a highly pure powder form of MDMA, which is ecstasy. But what's sold as Molly to these usually partygoers could be almost any drug. Some samples have been analyzed, and they've actually contained the drugs methylone or butylone, for example, and they're the same drugs that have been found in products sold under the disguise of bath salts. In the past, the name Molly has also been used for ecstasy tablets. It's been used for ecstasy in combination with LSD. And it's been also used for other synthetic stimulants similar to ecstasy, particularly a drug that's called TFMPP, which is very similar to ecstasy in its clinical effects and its hallucinations that it can produce. The popularity of Molly is increasing, though. We're really hearing a lot about it, and this is especially among young people between the ages of 16 and 24. We've heard in recent months about a lot of overdoses and a few deaths in the summer of 2013, especially in the northeastern United States. And most of these have been at concerts or music festivals. Now, to date, we still don't know exactly what the contents of these samples, these Molly samples, are that have caused these fatalities. So we're still kind of waiting to hear about that. Now, N-bomb is a slang name for a synthetic drug that's known as 2,5-INBOME, and that's sort of a chemical determination or chemical name for this particular drug. Other slang names for the same drug are around, and two of them in particular are Solaris and Smiles. But keep in mind that, like Molly, these slang names can refer to other drugs as well. So slang names are a little bit difficult to use when trying to figure out what the drug is that a patient has taken. Now, 2,5-INBOME is very similar to amphetamine and ecstasy, but it has strong hallucinogenic effects like LSD. It belongs to a family of synthetic drugs that we call the 2C drugs, and that's based on the chemical structure. Some of the 2C drugs have been around since the 1970s, and some examples are 2CI and 2CE. But in recent years, as laws have been passed, we've seen new analogs of those drugs, and they've gained in popularity. We first started hearing about N-bomb in 2010, with overdose cases starting to be described in the medical literature beginning in 2012. It's a very, very potent drug. It's often applied to blotter paper, and then the paper is then placed under the tug or on the inside of the cheek, just like can be done with LSD, which is another very potent drug. There are also reports of snorting the drug, injecting it, and smoking the powder form. So not, it's not just available on the blotter paper. Now, for healthcare providers, it really doesn't matter whether the drug is ecstasy or methylone or butylone or 2,5-INBOME. The toxic effects are very similar. What's different might be the potency of the drug, the onset of the effects, and the duration of the effects. But they're all stimulants. So what we would expect to see are things like agitation, hallucinations, dilated pupils. They may be very sweaty. They have tachycardia, hypertension, increased respiratory rate. And severe overdoses can actually result in things like psychosis, hyperthermia, seizures, very low sodium levels, acute renal failure, cerebral edema, and coma. When people die from taking these synthetic drugs, the death is often secondary to either the hyperthermia, seizures, or the cardiovascular effects. Now, when treating someone who has overdosed on any of these drugs, the goal is to manage the agitation and prevent end organ damage. If the patient has only mild agitation, you want to place them in a quiet, dark room with minimal stimulation, and that might be all that you need to do. But these drugs are pretty potent, and so quite frequently we need to sedate them with large doses of benzodiazepines. And it doesn't matter if you have in your drug arsenal midazolam or diazepam or lorazepam, any of the benzodiazepines are fine, and often they're necessary to calm the patient down. Antipsychotics such as haloperidol can also be used, but they have some adverse effects which might be additive to the effects of the stimulants that you're trying to treat, so they're not preferred in the acute phase of toxicity. We generally would reach for the benzodiazepines first. You need to monitor for hyperthermia, aggressively cool the patient if that's evident, and if you give the benzodiazepines, that'll actually help reduce the temperature as well just by sedating the patient. And benzodiazepines also are indicated if the patient is seizing. You might need to intubate the patients for airway protection as well. Now, I'd suggest contacting the poison center, your local poison control center, for more information if you're treating a patient who you suspect has taken one of these synthetic drugs of abuse, and also to report it so that we can collect data on these calls. And just as a reminder, the number is 1-800-222-1222. And one other reminder, that drugs on the street are changing almost as fast as we can tell you about them. So you need to keep an open mind about what was actually taken and treat the patient symptomatically. You're never really going to know for sure what it is that they've taken. The patient really doesn't know either. They may tell you it's Molly. They may think that it's a pure form of ecstasy, but they don't really know what's in that drug that they've taken. And they're usually not tested for on most tox screens in hospitals. So in many cases, we never find out what they actually took.
And, you know, it amazes me the inventiveness of whoever's creating these things, because like you said, there's new things around the corner every time we turn around. And it's just important to try to keep in touch with your local poison center so you know what's available and what seems to be on the horizon, but really treat the patient as they present.
And that's exactly right. You don't know what it is that they've taken in probably 99% of the cases that you're going to be confronted with. And most of them are stimulants, so it really doesn't change anything as far as the treatment of these drugs. And you're right about the inventiveness. I mean, it's as we keep passing laws to try to take care of some of these drugs, they just keep coming out with new drugs that are just altered ever so slightly in some cases to bypass these laws. So, it's something I don't see ending anytime soon. There have been literally hundreds of new drugs that have been invented or synthesized in the last several years. So I think this is going to be a problem. It's just going to continue.
Well, Lisa, thank you very much. And thank you for keeping us on our toes and letting us know what's out there.
You're welcome, Jamie, thanks a lot.
That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank all of you for checking out the show this week and remind you to follow up on all of the information from this week's show. You'll find it over at MedicCast.com/blog. Over there, you'll find a link in the show notes for the top of the at the top of the page. Go ahead and take a moment and follow up on the information and the links to news items and other things you'll find there each week. You can also sign up for the email newsletter. That's right there on the right-hand side of the page. Put in your name and email address, and it'll bring those links directly to your email inbox each week. So just fill that out and get that right to you and get the MedicCast weekly newsletter. I also welcome your comments and your suggestions by email directly, so shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com and send in your ideas for future episodes, like today's topic of traumatic asphyxiation. Send in your interview segments or whatever comments you have. I look forward to hearing from you, and I'll make sure I get back to you. I work hard to respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep those emails coming. If you want to catch up with me on social media sites or social media pages, well, you can find me most places under the handle PodMedic. So go ahead and catch me over on Twitter at twitter.com/PodMedic or over on Facebook, facebook.com/PodMedic. Make sure you friend or follow me over there so we can catch up online. And don't forget to check out the MedicCast Facebook page. We have almost 5,000 followers right now. So head over and check out the page over at facebook.com/MedicCast. Click the like button at the top of the page and join our community over there. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. Please make sure you spread the word and share the MedicCast with people you know, your colleagues, your students, if you're an EMS instructor, friends in the EMS world, and let them know about the show. I'll be back here each week with new episodes, interviews, tips, and more every Monday morning to start off your EMS week. So tell somebody else about the MedicCast today. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. It's time to close out the show. Don't forget to thank our sponsors, and remember, most importantly, folks, Scene Safety, BSI.